So how exactly do you use the tax code to help you out after losing millions of dollars? From Marketplace in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. The big story over the weekend was the revelation that Republican nominee Donald Trump's massive losses in the 1990s mean he may not have had to pay federal income taxes for nearly two decades. That's according to the New York Times, which got a hold of part of Mr. Trump's 1995 filing. Critics say provisions given to the real estate business are unfair. Supporters say Trump was smart to use them. But how did these provisions actually work? Marketplace's Jed Kim reports.
Say you lost $916 million. That's objectively a bad time. Less bad if you're a real estate mogul. David K. Johnson is an investigative journalist who focuses on tax issues and, believe it or not, Donald Trump.
The whole real estate business is built on two fundamentals. One is debt, called non-recourse debt. That is, the bank can only take the property back. It can't go after you personally.
The second, he says, is depreciation, a perceived loss in value.
Which allows you to report no income from the property.
And not only that, if you're a full-time real estate professional, you get to deduct depreciation against other forms of income. Len Berman directs the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center.
To the extent that Donald Trump has income from reality television shows or books or speaking engagements or other things, his losses in real estate can offset those as well. That's something that people in other businesses can't do.
We won't know exactly how Trump may have used these rules unless he releases his tax returns or unless someone else leaks more. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
Trade agreements have been getting a bad reputation in this election. They might be the only thing the candidates agree on. And they both oppose the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP, between the U.S. and the EU. Its passage seems unlikely, but President Obama is trying to make it part of his legacy before he leaves in January. The 15th round of talks starts today in New York. Marketplace's Andy Uhler has more.
15 rounds of discussion seems like a lot, but
that's not unusual given the complexity.
That's Gary Huffbauer with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He says you have to remember this would create the largest free trade zone in the world and streamline vastly different international regulation. Robert Stumberg, a law professor at Georgetown University, says that requires
the meeting of minds between U.S. and EU regulators on very complex subjects like emissions of automobiles and regulation of financial services.
He even offered a clearer way of describing it.
In other words, reinventing government.
Edward Alden is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations.
The problem is that raises a lot of pretty sensitive issues, especially when it comes to food.
He says American practices like using GMOs and washing raw chicken in a chlorinated bath are a problem.
So it's become a big item of popular protest in Europe.
All right, so is Obama going to get this done?
There's not a snowball's chance in hell of it being done by the end of this year.
I'm Andy Uhler for Marketplace.
Federal data shows 40% of all people in jail and almost 50% of women report having at least one disability. Most of those are mental disabilities. And those numbers have an economic context. The potential for an encounter with police often goes hand in hand with underfunded mental health services. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace reports.
There are a lot of ways disability can increase your likelihood of landing in jail. Carmen McIntyre with Detroit Wayne County Mental Health Authority says, imagine this.
I have chronic pain. You know, the doctors are freaked out about giving me opiates and the copays are more than I can afford. Someone introduces me to heroin, which not only helps my pain better than any of the pain meds do, is way cheaper.
More than half the people in the local jail system have also gotten services from her agency, which deals with mental illness and substance use. But before about 50 years ago, lots of people were sent to state mental hospitals instead, the infamous kind with doors that lock from the outside. Then, as attitudes toward mental health changed, federal law pushed states to shut those down in favor of community-based outpatient services. Carmen McIntyre says that effort, though, was never fully funded.
The jail system now in the United States is the largest provider of behavioral health services.
And while her agency has seen a bit more funding lately because of the expansion of Medicaid, its general fund is being drained by covering people who are in jail. Medicaid gets cut off for people who are incarcerated. Rebecca Vallis with the Center for American Progress says this system is wasteful.
Community-based treatment and prevention services cost far less than locking an individual up.
Jail systems are very aware of the problem, and they're pursuing solutions ranging from mental health diversion courts to officer training. But disability activist Leroy Moore says putting mental health funding toward police training is counterproductive. Police shouldn't be the first ones there anyway, he says. As state and local budgets begin to recover post-recession,
we want to have the funding go toward mental health services.
In other words, he says, let's try to prevent police contact in the first place. I'm Lewis Wallace for Marketplace.
Sometimes literary and financial journalism mix. The New York Review of Books claims that financial records point to Italian translator Anita Raja as the real person behind the pen name Elena Ferrante. Ferrante's Neapolitan novels are bestsellers, and the New York Review says Raja's income from their publishing house, as well as her real estate holdings, shot up in concert with the novel's success. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.